Next speaker, whose presentation should pop right up, will be Jennifer Beyer, who is at the Acute Communicable Disease Control Program in LA County. Jennifer?
Thank you. I'm going to briefly talk to you guys today about a norovirus outbreak, or actually two outbreaks, that happened simultaneously in Los Angeles County. I have no relationships to disclose. So just quickly, the objectives for this discussion is to describe the procedures for the investigation of foodborne outbreaks in Los Angeles County, to recognize the importance of food handler illness reporting policies and protocols, and also to understand the importance of prioritizing food safety and hand washing education for restaurant employees, especially those with food handling job duties. So maintaining food safety in Los Angeles County is truly a collaborative effort between retail and wholesale food facilities and county public health staff. Three specific programs within public health work on a daily basis to identify risks to food safety and investigate problems. These three programs are the surveillance program, environmental health program, and disease control program. For those of you who work in LA County, we have other names for them, but just for general reference, that's what we're going to refer to them here. The surveillance program receives approximately 1,800 complaints per year via phone, fax, and email. From here, reports are viewed by staff in two programs, the environmental health and disease control programs. Environmental health views the reports and initiates the investigation of food facilities in question. Every year, they perform approximately 1,700 investigations related to foodborne illness complaints in some capacity. And the disease control program also receives these foodborne illness complaints. And if there's more than approximately five persons in the complaining party, an investigation will be initiated. And we have approximately 30 to 40 outbreaks per year. So during the environmental health investigation, inspectors use criteria and regulations that were put in place by California Retail Food Code, or CalCode. CalCode became effective on July 1st of 2007 and is based on Federal Food Code of 2005, which represents the best available science in the overall goal of preventing foodborne illness. CalCode focuses food facility inspections on the most important foodborne illness risk factors, which were identified by Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. These risk factors include food from unsafe sources, inadequate cooking, improper holding temperature, contaminated equipment, and poor personal hygiene. The employee health section is probably most applicable to what we're going to be discussing today. The employee health section of CalCode charges food facilities with requirements for reporting ill employees and potential outbreaks of disease. This section states that any employee who is diagnosed with one of several reportable illnesses must report this information to the person in charge at their facility. The list of reportable illnesses includes Salmonella, Shigella, E. coli, noroviruses, amebiasis, and hepatitis A. The person in charge must report to environmental health or anyone in public health department any employee who is diagnosed with a reportable illness or any incident of two or more persons experiencing symptoms of acute gastrointestinal illness, which can include vomiting, diarrhea, stomach cramps, etc. In norovirus infection, it causes acute gastroenteritis, which is characterized by the sudden onset of a combination of signs and symptoms, including nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, stomach cramps. And additionally, cases may also experience headaches, chills, low-grade fever, body aches, and fatigue. Transmission is primarily fecal-oral. Some may be aerosolized because vomitus is also infectious. And people can become infected by touching contaminated surfaces or objects, including doorknobs, bed rails, and silverware, direct contact with another person who is sick, or eating food or drinking liquids that are contaminated. Noroviruses require a very low infectious dose to make you sick. Approximately 5 to 10 viral particles is all it takes. And they survive on surfaces for as long as a week. Additionally, viral shedding may continue in cases for up to 2 weeks after cessation of symptoms, and there is no long-lasting immunity to the virus. These factors improve noroviruses' ability to survive, and in the case of these outbreaks and other outbreaks, they increase the chances for secondary infections and/or prolonged exposure periods. So So these are general United States facts. Each year in the United States, approximately 23 million cases of acute GI illness are due to norovirus infection. Approximately 50% of all foodborne outbreaks in the United States are attributed to noroviruses. And we have seen norovirus outbreaks that have been linked to salads, salad dressings, sandwiches, bakery products, frosting, and of course, shared restrooms. Noroviruses in Los Angeles County are not, well, individual cases are not reportable. Only outbreaks are reportable, and an outbreak is characterized by two or more laboratory-confirmed cases of norovirus. So each year in LA County, there are approximately 30 confirmed norovirus outbreaks. However, there are many additional outbreaks that, while they're not lab-confirmed, they do meet the clinical case definition. Okay. So now we're going to take a closer look at the outbreaks that are the topic of this presentation. And just to provide a point of reference, I've included on this timeline the date which the Cal Code went into effect, which was July 1st of 2007. Approximately 4 months later, November 6th, we received reports of two clusters of illness associated with dining at two separate restaurant facilities in northern Los Angeles County. What is interesting about this is that Los Angeles County, as you may know, is a fairly large area. However, these two particular restaurants are fairly well-known chains, and the two facilities where this outbreak occurred happened to be within 2 to 5 miles of each other. Additionally, the cases who reported being ill all ate on Sunday, November 4th. And since it was so unusual to receive these types of complaints, we did initiate an outbreak investigation. Environmental Health also initiated an outbreak investigation and went out to the facilities to do their part of the investigation. And on November 7th, Environmental Health completed the inspection of Restaurant MC. And during this inspection, it was revealed that several employees were ill with GI symptoms, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, during the weekend of November 2nd to 4th. One of these employees, Employee A, was employed at two additional facilities, including the other restaurant in question, which is Restaurant BB. On November 8th, Environmental Health inspected the other restaurant and verified that yes, Employee A did work at the restaurant and was working on the day in question, which was November 4th. And by this point, Disease Control had received 4 foodborne illness complaints about Restaurant BB and 1 about Restaurant MC. Disease Control began actively seeking cases at both restaurants, and we asked for reservations lists from Sunday, November 4th. The reservations lists did reveal at least one additional party reporting illness after eating at Restaurant BB. So on November 9th, public health employees were sent to both restaurants to interview employees of the restaurant facilities. We sent 2 teams of 4 people each to perform these interviews and also to deliver specimen containers so that we could begin testing employees. From these interviews, it was determined that at least 5 additional employees at Restaurant MC and 1 additional employee at Restaurant BB were ill during the period in question. So the outbreak investigation kind of goes forward, and we jump forward to November 14th, which is the following week. It happens to be a Wednesday, and our disease control unit received an additional report of persons complaining of illness after eating takeout from Restaurant BB on Saturday, November 10th. Because these were new reports of illness associated with the restaurant, the Environmental Health initiated another investigation, and during this investigation, restaurant managers identified at least 1 employee who had left early on November 10th with GI symptoms of nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. So throughout the week, disease control staff received 3 additional reports of illness associated with dining at this restaurant on the date of November 10th. On Friday, November 16th, Environmental Health Program conducted another inspection of the restaurant, and they found several additional food safety issues. And at this point, after consultation with the Public Health Department and consultation with their headquarters, it was determined that they were going to voluntarily close their restaurant, and they were going to get rid of all of their food and produce, and they were going to do terminal cleaning and employee education. Employee education did occur the next day. It was a mandatory session. They did hire an outside consultant to do the training. However, they did consult with disease control staff regarding the content of the presentation. And then after reinspection on Monday the 19th, the restaurant reopened. This is the epi curve. It's both outbreaks together. The purple is restaurant MC and the blue is restaurant BB. And if you take a look, employee A was ill some onset sometime between 12 a.m. and 11:59 a.m. on the 4th of November. And if you notice the nice little curve that occurs right after that, most of the cases seem to be associated with that exposure. So this is what our outbreaks look like in summary and in numbers. We had 12 foodborne illness complaints. 131 patrons and more than 65 employees were interviewed, and these were done either by phone for the patrons or in person for the employees. 83 patrons and 7 food handlers were determined to meet the case definition and were ill. We collected a total of 19 stool specimens, and 17 out of these 19 tested positive for norovirus. So what did we learn from these outbreaks? As we all know, health education is a necessary part of any outbreak investigation, and in some cases, food facilities will choose to hire an outside consultant. Usually these consultants are not experts in food safety or foodborne illnesses, and therefore, the availability of easy to use and understand health information is critical. Public Health developed a presentation in the case of this outbreak and discussed food safety as it relates to the situation and basic norovirus information with the headquarters and provided this information to the consultant. However, whatever amount of that information was actually used was fairly small. It is important to stress that while facilities are free to decide how best to communicate messages to employees, every effort should be made to ensure that this information is accurate and timely. And instructing consultants to contact the local health jurisdiction would probably help to ensure the accuracy of the information presented. Another lesson was problems translating knowledge into action, and how do we make regulations work? How do we convince a worker who has 3 jobs and can't afford to take a day off to call in sick when it's necessary? In the case of noroviruses, the recommendations for food handlers are that persons remain off work until 72 hours after cessation of primary symptoms. So if the duration of illness for noroviruses is approximately 24 to 48 hours, and we're asking them to remain off work for an additional 72, that's about 4 to 5 days, and these employees are not paid for time off, which can be very cost prohibitive in some families, which is why a lot of people choose to stay and work. One option for a potential solution is to adopt a mandatory paid sick time policy. While it may appear too costly, we should weigh the potential cost savings of preventing foodborne disease and also the potential closure of the outbreak or of the food facility. And finally, enforcement is part of all of our jobs. However, there's no reason that we can't do this with a smile. And in this case of this outbreak, we found that open and honest communication, as well as being available to restaurant headquarters, managers, and anyone else involved in the outbreak, really helped to facilitate communication, not only between investigation units, but also between investigation units and the food facilities themselves. And I think that if we had not done this, if we hadn't been open and truly honest with our headquarters for the restaurants, they probably wouldn't have been so willing to work with us, and they probably would not have closed their restaurant. So in conclusion, we know now, we've seen the importance of communicating policy changes, even if it's assumed affected parties are already aware. We need to be proactive in our approach to outbreaks, especially case finding, specimen collection, employee and management education, and effective collaboration is critical at all levels to ensure the success of outbreak investigations. So to acknowledge a few people, there's too many people to list on the slides. A few of them are in the back of the room, Curtis Croker, Susie Tang, and there's various other ACD staff here. So thank you.
Questions? Plenty of time.
Okay, any questions? Okay.
I have a quick question for you about the structure. So you have a surveillance group and you have a disease control group.
Uh-huh.
That's the difference.
Okay, well, I didn't really have any better way to describe them. The surveillance group is actually our morbidity unit, and they receive intakes of all of our morbidity reports, and that includes any reportable illness as well as outbreaks and clusters of illness. So that's them. Our disease control unit is actually better termed as the surveillance and disease control branch. It's acute communicable disease control. And that's where all the epi investigation happens for the cases that are reported to the morbidity unit. And they provide it to us. It's all electronic, so we can see it. It's just that morbidity receives the information, enters it into the electronic system, and then we look at it on the system when it's in there.
Both groups are different qualifications?
Yes, yes. The people working in acute communicable disease control primarily are physicians and epidemiologists and nurses. Morbidity unit staff tend to be more clerical.
I worked in a hospital in Massachusetts where we had a papillomavirus outbreak that we could start with patients and spread to a huge numbers of staff.
Uh-huh.
And there's two issues. One was the lab won't routinely run norovirus specimens. And one, the index was run, but it was sent out. So we couldn't use the definition like you have, but just the incredible infectivity was the clinical basis of the diagnosis. Which leads me to my next question, which is, in the Cal code, it sounds like the victim of the illness is responsible themselves for reporting it, but what about the lab and the healthcare professionals? Do they, are they supposed to be reporting it? Does the lab automatically report the positive result?
There are some labs. Some diseases are automatically lab reportable and others are not. Norovirus, for example, individual cases are not reportable. So generally labs will run the tests, but we don't get those reports. As for Salmonella, Shigella, E. coli, all those other diseases, those are actual reportable diseases in LA County. And so we do generally receive reports on them. However, we sometimes don't receive information indicating that those persons are food workers. So that's where there's a gap in the information. And so that's why this law was put into place, so that we would be able to easily identify food workers who had been identified with these illnesses so that we could remove them from work and prevent complications.
I thought your slide said that you didn't investigate, so you had two lab-confirmed cases.
No, that's just what we consider to be the definition of an official outbreak. We can investigate before we have diagnosis of cases. In fact, most times we don't receive diagnosis until a week or two after the outbreak investigation is initiated. Yeah?
I'd like to comment on something that you mentioned in passing. The common employee between the two outbreaks. And Albuquerque, we investigated a hepatitis A outbreak where the vector was really the common employees. And it turns out there's a lively traffic and restaurant workers who work in different places.
Yeah.
This may also be true for nursing homes and similar places. So then considering the employees as a vector is, I think, important.
Yeah, and we have seen that in norovirus outbreaks in nursing home as well, that you have staff who work at multiple facilities, and so you have to be careful to make sure to ask the question if they work at other facilities and also check with the other facilities to see if there's been any reported increase in GI illness.
One last question.
Go ahead. We did have an unusually large number of cases tested or specimens tested, but we have a very good working relationship with the public health laboratory, and they work directly with us, and they're the ones that tested all these specimens. And they happened to actually be going through an accreditation process, so they needed specimens to test to do this. So we kindly gave them as many as they could handle.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Our next speaker.